Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media and WBFO, this is What's Next, producer picks of the week. Highlights of the best What's Next episodes heard during the previous week. On today's show...
Congratulations. You're into phase two and you get the $100,000. And I say that, and that's not like a bragging statement. It is a statement that says you can find ways to fund your dream that doesn't include asking a bank for money.
We play back Monday's episode with Chantel Patton, the founder of That Brown Bag. And we'll close with...
And really also looking at our past and what our history has been as a city to really get to a place where we can actually love each other beyond just looking and dividing with refugee versus non-refugee, asylum seeker versus city-born or American-born or whatever the case may be.
A rewind of Tuesday's episode with Magdalena Nichols and Anna Mongo from the Jericho Road Community Health Center. I'm Michael Loss. Thank you for tuning in. First, we revisit Jay Moran's conversation with Chantel Patton, the founder of That Brown Bag, an annual directory that highlights all of the Black-owned businesses in Western New York, Central New York, and Toronto.
So you're already trying to, you're in the process of pivoting this, but, and I want to get into that, but let's just make sure, and for those who aren't familiar with That Brown Bag, you know, what exactly it is in its current state.
So in its current state, That Brown Bag is a hard copy annual printed directory that highlights all of the Black-owned businesses in Western New York, Central New York, and Toronto.
Simple enough there for sure. And but now when we're talking about pivoting, though, you have, I mean, you're changing with the times to a certain extent. Now we can get into what exactly is influencing that, but let's talk about what you're projecting here.
Absolutely. So the goal is to make the directory and its contents more accessible, whether it be to the general public or to a larger consumer base. So we're currently pivoting, still going to continue to print the hard copy directory for some time while we transition to a digital portal platform that will allow individuals the ability to access, search, and filter with a little bit more specificity what they're looking for in regards to a Black-owned business. So if they're looking for specifically a bakery that can do 1,000 cookies in a short capacity of time, they'll be able to search that out. And I think that's going to make that a more user-friendly and a more accessible way to locate these businesses.
And you were saying before we went on the air that in a lot of ways you can see this becoming larger in terms of demand because of the need to fulfill a certain level of contracting when it comes to minority and Black-owned businesses, correct?
Absolutely. Most states have some type of budgetary requirements if you want to receive funding. New York State, for example, is a 30% budgetary requirement that has to be used with MWBEs, Minority Women Business Enterprises. And that's in order to receive any funding, any grants, things of that nature. And so what we were finding is that the businesses who have this budgetary requirement were often returning at the end of the year with an excuse that said we could not find individuals to fill this budgetary requirement. That ultimately turned into the state loosening the terms of what an MWB is.
Okay.
To be quite frank with you, you can be a Caucasian woman and be MWBE certified because you are a woman-owned business enterprise.
Oh, okay. All right.
And what we had found way back when was individuals putting businesses in their wife's names in order to receive the designation. What we really want to do is ensure that we highlight what is normally an underrepresented population in the business world, which is going to be the minority business owner. So being able to present them on a larger platform and bridge the gap between their maybe brick and mortar or online business and, say, for example, your M&T banks, your ECMCs, your MOGs, and the brown bag is there to stand in the gap to connect the two. That says, I know ECMC has an initiative where they are looking to fill vendor vendor spaces. Let's make it easy for the person that sits in the seat that has to curate these vendor relationships. Let's make it easier for that person to do their job.
Since you were last here, it's been almost 2 years now, right?
Yes.
How has, not so much of your company, but have we seen an increase in Black and minority-owned businesses? Are we seeing that? And I want to be more specific, of course, because we are talking to Buffalo, but more in this community. Are we seeing that?
Absolutely.
Okay.
What I will say is, while unfortunate as the pandemic of COVID-19 was, it birthed a whole new generation of entrepreneurs. And it birthed a lot of that generation of entrepreneurs out of necessity. Businesses closing, no more office hours, no more walking into brick and mortars. And it caused a new spark of creativity, ingenuity, and entrepreneurship. In the Buffalo community, you know, I've seen going into business accelerator programs and seeing individuals that I knew for a fact had corporate positions, and now they're saying, no, I want to be an entrepreneur instead. I want to have a little bit more control. And so it gives me great joy, you know, to be able to amplify these business owners, especially these infant business owners, because normally they don't have the capital to market.
Certainly. And I can appreciate that. So you're talking to a new business, right? What do you see? What are you seeing both from a positive? It sounds like you said kind of a creative spirit, mm-hmm. that's learning to kind of navigate a new world. But at the same time, and beyond lack of capital, what else do you see that is needed for some of these business owners?
Business education, financial literacy, also wellness programs, because being an entrepreneur is different than logging into a 9-to-5 every day. And it's a different form of wellness. You know, it's different form of self-motivation. It is different form of meditation. You don't, entrepreneurship can often be lonely. So it's also in finding ways to commune with other entrepreneurs. Also ensuring that we're supportive of one another. There's 75 different brands of bread sitting inside of a Tops right now.
Right.
And none of them care. Sara Lee doesn't care that Artisan is next to her. And Hostess doesn't care that the store brand is two shelves under them. Everybody is going to buy their own personal brand of bread. And they can coexist on the same shelf as we can also in business.
You know, this brings up a theme that I want to see if I can explore a little with you. You know, May 14th, 2022, we recall the tragedy and the sadness. Yes. But we also recall at least what seemed to be, and I think a lot of people predicted this, kind of a temporary outpouring of empathy, mm-hmm. and, you know, all very positive. I'm curious if you have seen that translate into more businesses, more Black-owned businesses, seeing, you know, more of that outpouring turning into, you know, real transactions.
So let me start by saying I live so close to the Tops on Jefferson, I can hear Deli, you have a phone call on 801 from my living room.
Mm.
Okay. So it was in literally in my front yard. And recalling that outpour that showed up, and during the weeks that immediately followed, you know, the shooting, I kept asking, where will they be in a year?
Right.
Those who remain, they're there, they're steadfast, they're strong. I have seen increase in the businesses in that area. Prime example, Golden Cup Coffee.
Certainly, right.
Got to give a huge shout out to Mr. and Mrs. Stitz.
Yep. And if you haven't had a chance, have tried the sweet potato pound cake mm-hmm. sometime. But anyway, I apologize.
It's okay, because that is definitely one of my favorites in there. But they are now in a process of expanding.
Excellent.
They're going to be moving from the corner of Jefferson and Utica to the corner of Jefferson and Glenwood, I believe,
oh, all right.
which is going to be a larger space, which indicates to me growth and expansion within their business. You don't move into a larger space if your business isn't growing.
Right.
Seeing, you know, spaces like Pixie's Bar and Grill being worked on and, you know, the owner, Kenny Ivy, going in there and saying, I'm ready to reopen and I want to reopen on Jefferson. While again, as unfortunate and as tragic as it was to go through the 514 shooting, that there's nothing that we can say we're going to find a silver lining in that we lost 10 souls. What it did do for the east side of Buffalo is it shed light on what I feel was a forgotten territory in the city of Buffalo. Forgotten, overlooked, and undervalued. And now individuals are starting to recognize the value that has been there all along. There's a, for me, Jefferson Avenue is Buffalo's Black Wall Street. There is a huge concentration of Black-owned businesses up and down Jefferson Avenue. And now, after someone came and tried to steal from our community, he actually didn't realize that he deposited into it. I hope he sits with that every night as well.
Well, and there's a lot of things we could hope for that individual that aren't necessarily all that a positive. Chantel Patton with us this morning on What's Next. I like what you called Jefferson Avenue, the Black Wall Street of Buffalo. Is there more room for more businesses on Jefferson?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
Absolutely. There are vacant properties. There are vacant lots. I think what we need is, and especially now we've got, you know, new mayoral administration sitting, is I think we really need to have a conversation about where we're investing business-wise, where we are putting grants and funding and, you know, revitalization monies at, and the Jefferson area, the Fillmore area. We're talking about, you know, covering the expressway. What are we putting in its place? And there's absolutely room for more Black-owned business, for more businesses, period, on Jefferson Avenue and beyond in the surrounding adjacent areas as well.
You know, we don't like to talk about the idea that, you know, these projects sometimes, well, we put this here and everything else is going to grow. And we can go all around the city of Buffalo and Western New York and find a lot of those that have not worked. But what about for Jefferson? Is there something that you say, hey, if this was here, this would help spawn growth all around this area?
I honestly think it's already there. It just doesn't get enough shine.
Okay.
And that would be the Beverly Gray exchange at Beverly Gray.
Okay.
There's two of them. And then also immediately adjacent would be the Foundry, the makerspace. I don't think they get enough promotion. I don't think they get highlighted enough. But these are two spaces dedicated to teaching individuals about entrepreneurship, business ownership, connecting them to resources. And if more people were to utilize them, the awareness would grow, but it's there. It's there and it's present. It's the awareness.
Okay.
I think it's the awareness that's missing, because the tools and the resources, they've been put in place.
Also, it's interesting when you look at the mission statement at the Brown Bag. You know, you like to try to help businesses exchange best practices with like-minded individuals with to understand the unique journey of Black-owned businesses. The unique journey. I really like the way that sounds. So let's talk about what you hear. What's inside that journey for Black-owned businesses, especially here in Buffalo?
More often than not, individuals from my community, when they're starting a business, it's not, I'm going to school, I'm going to get a degree in business administration, I'm going to learn accounting, I'm going to learn marketing. It's, I've got this dope idea, and I feel like people will buy it. And so that journey for a Black entrepreneur, I think my best analogy, and I say this all the time, is we build planes while we're in the air. We know where we're going,
right.
But we are literally winging it at every turn. It is in knowing where to go for resources, and sometimes that's difficult. It is in finding mentorship. Sometimes that proves to be difficult. now we've got this uprising of business accelerator programs and, you know, like the Center for Entrepreneurial Leadership has a couple of different programs, some for women, some for minority business owners. But I think that was really going to be like the underlying theme that I found with talking to a lot of entrepreneurs is, again, I've got this super dope idea, but I don't even know where to start.
Right. I love that analogy. That really is quite the metaphor. We're building
we're
a plane as we're flying. We're in the air. So but at the same time, that also, while it expresses maybe a little uncertainty or maybe a lot of uncertainty down the road, where are we flying to? How are we getting there? Well, our plane's not built yet. At the same time, I think it highlights maybe a unique set of skills or talents. What is inside that? What influences that?
I think that even goes back generationally when we talk about, well, I always say my Black history didn't start with slavery, but my American Black history, they wanted to start with slavery. But I think it's in seeing the ingenuity, the creativity, the we're going to build something out of nothing that's generationally ingrained into my people. It's we're going to give you scraps and you make soul food. You know, we're going to give you projects and you make them into homes. We're going to give you the hood and you're going to make it, you know, into Hollywood. So I think that there is something to be said about the creativity and the ingenuity that is passed down in our DNA. And it comes from survival tactics. You push people against a corner, one of two things. They're either going to fly, they're going to run, or they're going to fight. And my people have a huge practice of you're not going to make us run.
Hmm.
So we're going to fight and we're going to fight the best way we know how. And that is taking what you gave us while laughing and turning trash into treasure.
What about on the other side of it, though? And it's not a pretty side in the sense that what are the obstacles? What are the attitudes that you think are holding back? And obviously being under resources is a huge thing. You can never overstate that. Mm-hmm. That is obvious. But I'm assuming there still are attitudes that get in the way of Black businesses trying to move forward.
It's not even attitude, it's ego. The majority of the time it is ego. It is, I don't need help, I already know. I asked my cousin has a business. But your cousin's been winging it for the past 10 years. Mm. He just got lucky, you know? Mm-hmm. So the majority of it is going to be ego. If we can put our egos off to the side, if we can humble ourselves and say, and I struggle with it too, I need help. And then accepting said help when it's handed out. I have literally been the epitome of building the plane while I'm in the air. I've built that brown bag literally while in the trenches. And so while yes, I can say I got lucky because it worked, but I did have to go back and educate myself because I knew that there was only so high I could take this plane.
Okay.
The altitude is limited if I'm limited.
Yeah. That's interesting. So what have you? So you had to go back and look at the diagrams for how to build the plane. I'm going to keep going back to that that metaphor, but I think it's worthwhile, and we can have some fun with it too at the same time. But so let's talk about what have you learned? I mean, both whether it's through education or just through hard knocks.
Combination. So, I mean, I took it upon myself to say, how can I tell a business owner how to be a business owner first and foremost? And I was still going to work for someone else every day.
Mm.
So the first thing I did was say, I quit. And then I began to immerse myself into various business programs, business accelerators, the IC Success Program at the Buffalo Niagara Medical Group, the MWE program at UB Center for Entrepreneurial Leadership, going through programs as well to show the example that says, I can't recommend a program to you if I haven't tasted it myself. That's like me saying, eat this chicken and I've never eaten it before, but it's delicious, you know? So in doing that, it also allowed me to expand my tribe. I found wonderful coaches and mentors in these programs who I still, post-graduation, am able to pick up the phone and call. Taking the time out to really deep dive into who am I trying to reach with the directory? Is it my everyday going into, you know, Family Dollar consumer, or what's going to make the greatest impact for the business owners that I'm serving? Let's get them to a bigger audience. And then I went through a series of pitch competitions.
Right.
Pitch after pitch after pitch. But those were my validation moments that says if someone's...
Were they all validations, or were there, again, hard knocks in there?
I had a couple of hard knocks. Yeah. Everything's not roses, and right. I'm willing to...
You learned, though.
Yeah, and absolutely willing to share with people, because we always share our victories.
Yeah.
But being willing to share the shortcomings, the downfalls, those moments. I tell people all the time, I wake up every morning and I quit the directory. Every morning I'm like, I'm not doing this. Yeah. But then I get a phone call from a business owner that says, thank you.
Sure.
And I'm like, I guess I'll do it again.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So I've definitely pitched, and they're like, yeah, no, we don't believe you. You need more people. And then I've pitched, and I've had individuals say, give her $100,000 for this.
Mm.
Give her $15,000 for this. So my give hers ring louder for me than the no's. However, for me, no doesn't mean no. It means next opportunity. So it's an opportunity for me to ask the person that said no, why did you say no?
What did you hear?
And it was actually one of the caveats was people were concerned about what's happening right now with DEI initiatives.
Mm.
So we're going to pour money into this black business directory, and then people are going to say, screw DEI. And now we've poured this money into this directory that now is pointless. And I'm like, it's never going to be pointless. Was the Green Book pointless? Green Book's still relevant today. The Green Book is now that brown bag.
Right.
So.
Right. So, but that is a legit... I don't want to use the word legitimate concern, but that is a concern that you've been hearing
mm-hmm.
about the DEI. I mentioned it before I came into this interview. We just caught a press conference with the current federal administration, and apparently that's going to be a ongoing theme for mm-hmm. the near future on a federal level for sure. Okay, let's talk about the successes then. Come on, what was it like when you the first time it said, yeah, here's some money?
That would be I see success, and okay. Juwaria Dahir is the executive director over there, and she just instilled a lot of confidence in, you know, you having already been doing the directory for a couple of years. Yay, this is cute. And she was like, no, ma'am, you've got the potential to take over a lot with this. So we're going to give you a couple $1,000. Let's see what you do with it. And that was an aha moment for me. Like, people are willing to pay more than a couple bucks for this
mm-hmm.
Because they see the potential in it. Led me into, you know, okay, I'm going to do another competition and another competition, which ultimately led me to Springboard New York. And as nervous as I was for that pitch, because I was asking for a lot of money.
Right.
Literally, they said I hung up because the pitch was done by Zoom. They said, I hung up from the Zoom call and everybody said, give her the money. Like, there was no deliberation in that one. And again, aha moment, I'm on to something. Get to the UB Cultivator program and I probably pulled out a lot of hair because that was for a 6-figure check.
Oh.
So everyone is like more validation and more confirmation. And likewise, finished that pitch and they said, we'll talk to you in a couple of days.
Hmm.
I'm like, great. This was a Tuesday. Great. The rest of my week shot. And that was at like around 11:30 a.m. And at 2:30, my coach from the program said, we need you to hop on a Zoom. And I said, this is either going to be really, really good, or this is going to be really, really bad. And I hopped on the Zoom and they said, we couldn't even wait. Congratulations, you're into phase two and you get the $100,000. And I say that, and that's not like a bragging statement. It is a statement that says you can find ways to fund your dream that doesn't include asking a bank for money.
That's encouraging. Should have told me that a long time ago, but that's another story.
Because I have no loans for the directory whatsoever. No loans,
so
no outstanding credit.
Everything out of your pocket.
Or, yes.
And now you're getting some much-needed infusion of capital to help you expand as well. We'll most certainly want to get into those plans. But just a little bit back to that whole thing. So when you were doing these pitches, how specific did you have to be about what you needed or what you wanted, you were targeting that money for?
Every pitch is different.
Okay.
They always want to know what you're going to spend the money on. So Springboard is a little loose. What's your budget? What would you like to use it for? Where are you going to direct the funds? $15,000. I'm going to hire a web developer. UB Cultivator was very specific.
Mm.
How much are you going to put towards, the marketing? How much are you going to put towards the platform development? What's your stage for sustainability beyond this investment? What are your plans for customer acquisition and customer retention? And by going through the previous accelerators, I had answers to those questions. Had I gone through the UB Cultivator program before going through iSeek Success, and they said something like, what's your customer acquisition cost or your CAC? And I'd have gone, my what? So
I was just about ready to do myself, but anyway, yeah.
But learning the formulas, learning what goes into the difference between acquiring a customer and keeping a customer, and how much is a customer worth over X amount of years, it helped me determine who was I targeting, who do I want to talk to, and how long do I want to keep them as a customer. We always talk about wanting forever customers, but honestly, they don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
They don't. So it's now, okay, I want to retain this corporate customer for at least 5 years. That's a tangible goal. So, you know, going through getting those yeses,
mm-hmm.
they're validating. They're also humbling. It's you believe not just in the product, but you believe in me because it's just me behind this product.
To our guest today, Chantel Patton, the founder and operator of That Brown Bag Minority Business Directory, who has worked to connect lots of local businesses, most of them minority-owned, black-owned mm-hmm. businesses here in Western New York. Let's give a little, I guess, shine to some of these businesses, right? Who was the first? Do you remember your first? You must remember who your first was.
Black Monarchy.
Okay.
So Felicia Natalie Dove, she at one point had a brick and mortar in the Five Points, West Utica, yep. right there. She has since closed the actual brick and mortar. COVID happens.
Yeah.
But she's gone online and she's actually still like doing costume design. She's done costume design for Shea's 710. But Felicia, I walked into her store and said, sis, I want to make a directory of all the businesses. And she said, whatever you want to do, I'm supporting.
Wow.
And to this day, she's still Big Brown Bag day one supporter.
So yeah. We can still find her through the Brown Bag.
Yes, you can.
Okay. Just can't find her brick and mortar store anymore.
But you can do online orders with her, custom orders, everything. So she's phenomenal.
Have you seen a lot of that? A lot of people switching from the brick and mortar to the online in your directory?
Yes. Yeah. COVID. Like I said, COVID sure. was like a hugely pivotal moment, not just for people health-wise, but commerce-wise as well, with people not venturing out into brick-and-mortar locations. A lot of retail spaces did have to pivot and move into more of an e-commerce, drop shipping, online retail space. So we did lose a lot of our brick-and-mortars, but they still were able to maintain.
This is going to be like asking the mother of 70 children who her favorite is. But is there a business, and for whatever reason you can flash this out, but when you think, boy, they went through into the brown bag directory, and that business, it's the one that shows the potential of this type of connection a little bit. You know, obviously, if they're still with you,
all my babies,
they're succeeding. There are all your babies,
all but my one, brown bag babies.
But one that maybe say, boy, when you first got in, like, I'm not sure about this, and then here we are.
There's one that stands out, which would be Rada Baked Goods. Mm. I met them at a Saturday Academy in Buffalo Public Schools at West Hurdle. And when I first found out about them, they were inside of the West Side Bazaar. So they were part of Weedy.
Okay.
When the West Side Bazaar prior to the fire was on Grant.
Grant Street.
And walking in there and seeing, they had a little station inside of the bazaar. And I'm going, these cupcakes are phenomenal, but I need them to have more space.
Right.
And since then, I didn't even have to talk to them. Like, literally, find them in the Saturday academies. And then it was, actually, they hunted me down. They chased me around West Hurdle.
Sure.
Which I'm grateful for. I'm so glad that was like a confirmation of the impact. But now they've got, you know, their location on Amherst in the Black Rock area.
Mm-hmm. Adam Harris, as a matter of fact, yeah.
Yes, and they do, you know, a lot of community engagement. They're the Thomases, and they want to also give back and educate as well. So seeing them come from a stand inside of Weedy's West Side Bazaar to a brick and mortar and to them giving back to the community that they sit in, that's why I do what I do.
You know, more than once during our conversation, you've mentioned I was out. I was at West Hurdle. I was here. I was there. How important is that attitude, that spirit, that energy for a startup business? Especially somebody who is a minority-owned or woman-owned business.
Well, if we're talking about Buffalo, ingratiating yourself into the community is absolutely necessary. We are a city of show me first.
Mm-hmm.
Let me see what you're doing and what you're about before I hop on board. And so being forward-facing, being cordial, ingratiating yourself is absolutely necessary. I got hundreds of businesses that trust me with their business information. And it's not just because, oh, we've heard of Chantel. It's, I saw her at Mana. I saw her at Trend Up. I saw her at Miss Eye Candy. She is, you know, on Facebook wearing a lavish sweatshirt. She's on Facebook wearing, you know, X, Y, and Z. She's sharing it. It's very paramount that you become a part of the community that you wish to extract from, because you're asking people to spend their money with you. They want to know, why should I spend my money with you?
Right.
So it's hugely, especially for a new business, important to become a neighbor.
You know, we've talked a little bit about how if for a while you were going around asking businesses to go with your business, and then you realize that I'm still going to a 9-to-5 job every day, and so I've got to really live this, and then you decided to live it. At the same time, can you reflect on your personal change? Or maybe this is always who you were, that you're this outgoing person who is forward-facing, going to all these types of events, or is it something that you need to kind of push yourself over the edge a little bit to get out there?
I think it was always in me.
Yeah.
I think it's those types of virtues that they're either in you, yeah, or they're not. They're in you, not on you. So I think it was always in me. When I started to do work with my now the love of my life partner, him being such a creative blew oxygen onto the fire that was already embering within me. So I definitely give him a lot of that. He's my muse type of thing.
Sure. That was Chantel Patton, the founder of That Brown Bag. We'll close today's show out with Magdalena Nichols and Anna Mongo, the Chief Operating Officer and Chief Program Officer of the Jericho Road Community Health Center. The two sit down with Jay Moran to discuss health disparities in the refugee population and the positive impact that refugee resettlement can have on Western New York.
What intrigued us and what drew us to bring you guys in, and we do appreciate you taking some time because I know it's very busy for you, but the recent billboard campaign that Jericho Road has been sponsoring, the Love Thy Neighbor campaign. What is behind this campaign? Who wants to tackle that one first and foremost?
I can start. I mean, so it's rooted in the story in the Bible from Luke 10, which is the story of the Good Samaritan, and really what it means to actually love your neighbor. I mean, it depicts the story of a man who was beaten on the side of the road, and multiple people walk past him, and finally a Samaritan, the least potential person who could have potentially stopped to actually address him and take care of his needs at that point. And the idea of what it, does it actually mean to love your neighbor, and who is your neighbor as a part of that. And so our intentionality in that campaign is to really push us as a community, especially based on where our nation is in this moment, to challenge ourselves to say, who is our neighbor, which is not people who look like us. It's not people who sound like us. It's not our next door neighbor. It's anyone who has a need that we are called to be kind to and to extend mercy to, and grace and so forth, so on. And so in this moment, in this season, that campaign and the grounding of it in the story of the Good Samaritan is what we've been focused on as an organization.
I think for us, it was a really natural move into sort of that theme, because the organization itself, Jericho Road, is based on that same story. The road that the person was left beaten on was actually the Jericho Road. So this is really a strong part of who we have always been as an organization, is that we always believe that we should find the people who are most vulnerable and stand with them in that moment and figure out ways to provide support. So I think it was a really natural tie-in to the campaign, because it's who we are as an agency anyway.
And maybe just to get into it a little specific then. So I know I've seen some of the billboards, different billboards, different people on it. What are we seeing?
So the one that specifically has all the various pictures depict people of different complexions, different religions, and it's all encompassing of our staff. And again, the idea of who your neighbor is anyone. And so we wanted our community to see that Jericho Road often is noted as the organization that is a refugee organization, but we are more than that. We care for Black and brown communities as much as we care for refugees. And so the idea behind all those various phases is to paint this picture that we are all neighbors to each other, whether I have a hijab on my head and or I'm African American and or I'm Caucasian and I'm from a different nation or whatever the case may be. Our neighbor can look like anyone that we are called to be able to stand in the gap for in this moment, in this season. And so that's the depiction behind those pictures and why the faces are all different complexions and so forth, so on.
The three billboards as a whole, there's three in total. One says, City of Good Neighbors, question mark. The other says, Who is my neighbor, question mark. And the last one has sort of blank thy neighbor, and it has a variety of terms that you can use to fill in the blank, like empower, clothe, shelter. Mm-hmm. And on the line itself, it says, Love thy neighbor.
Is it, let's perhaps maybe take this conversation then into the other side of that coin. There's a reason for this billboard. Like you said, it's at this moment. There's a national moment here that this only seems to be getting more and more intensified as the days go on here. But is there, or do you, in this community, a need to have this conversation? You know, I think, you know, a lot of the people who have sat right where you're sitting right now, we've talked to a lot of people who embrace this concept that there are new people, new Americans coming to Buffalo, and what those new Americans have done for Buffalo in the last decade or so. Or, well, I think when you talk about Buffalo, you could be talking about its entire history, really. But yeah. I think we're, you know, we're a little bit more specific about what's, you know, how the world has been changing here. But to that, is there or are, do you hear that other side, that sense that these aren't my neighbors, they don't look like my neighbors? Do you hear those kind of conversations? Do they come your way?
You know, I think especially in this moment, people have been empowered to talk about the flip side of that coin. So I think that is sort of the reality is, yes, we are hearing people say, we don't want refugee resettlement, we don't want immigrants in our community, we don't want this sort of effort to take place in our community. I think what always has given me hope about Buffalo specifically is that, you know, Buffalo is the city of good neighbors. I think Buffalo does recognize as a whole that refugees, immigrants, people that look different than us really have contributed to our economy, really have made a much better place for Buffalo to be. I think there's been a general understanding that, you know, this is part of what's bringing back the population of the city of Buffalo. I mean, multiple people at the last census really attributed the growth in our population to the fact that we have this incoming population, and you need incoming population in a city in order to make a city thrive. So I do think, you know, at all different levels, there is sort of this idea that Buffalo is the city of good neighbors and what that means. And it has been a very welcoming place, for sure. I think given the changes in administration, it's about to hit everybody in a very different way than how it's hit people in the past.
Yeah. I think the only thing I'd add to that is that, you know, we do also have a history as a city, right? We are the city of good neighbors, but we do have a history of racial segregation. I mean, I think we were just rated that recently in a recent survey. And so I think conversations like this actually challenge us to look at not only that history, but also where we stand. I think a people who forget their history are doomed to repeat it, essentially. That's what the saying is. And I think our city has an opportunity to continue to be on the forefront of what it actually looks like to love our neighbors. But that does require a little bit of digging back into what our history has been, what some of the surveys have shown at this point. And again, to be able to look past race and immigration status and so forth, so on. I think the notion behind it too also goes beyond refugees. If we are racially segregated in the way that our city has been rated, it goes beyond just refugees. It's Black and brown, it's Hispanics and so forth, so on. And so this campaign is holistic. The idea behind it is to target more than just what's happening in our refugee communities, but also to look at each other. Anna and I are two different complexions and racial backgrounds and so forth, so on. And so it goes beyond just the refugee component and really also looking at our past and what our history has been as a city to really get to a place where we can actually love each other beyond just looking and dividing with refugee versus non-refugee, asylum seeker versus city-born or American-born or whatever the case may be.
I even want to keep jumping on that because I think, you know, we as a city have faced lots of challenges. Mm-hmm. And those challenges, as she said, really go back generations. And we do ourselves a disservice as a city if we only focus on what's happening in this generation, because mm-hmm. there is a context and understanding that really goes beyond, you know, what's been happening in this generation. And when you look at, you know, things like we have an issue with lead pipes in our city, and lead exposure among children, that's not an issue. That's definitely an equity issue, and it's not just a refugee and immigrant issue. It really extends far beyond that, and it really is, you know, zip code by zip code. If you look at health outcomes in, you know, the east side versus the west side versus North Buffalo, you see a picture that's not just, yes, we're racially divided, and there's, you know, a line where it seems, you know, how our city is divided, but it also directly correlates to what health outcomes are, mm-hmm. people's quality of life, who, you know, really faced more challenges than others during the blizzard of 22. Mm-hmm. I mean, it really was quite clear that these sort of divides in our city directly translate to equity, access, you know, who's addressed first, what services people have access to, what resources, how those resources are distributed across the city. And so I think, you know, as she said, we're very much thought of as immigrant and refugee agency. And I think, you know, we want to say this isn't only that. It sure certainly is a contributing piece of that. But really, this is a much broader discussion.
I appreciate that. And you brought up three or four issues that I most certainly like to follow up. And I'm glad you brought up the Christmas blizzard of 2022, mm-hmm. because I think so quickly that tragedy became a weather event. We heard about people dying, and it just seemed to kind of just, you know, evaporate into history to a certain extent, mm-hmm. very quickly. But Jericho Road, you're on the front lines. You see, you hear. What did you see? What did you hear? What do you understand about what happened during that blizzard?
I mean, I think some of the things that we heard were feedback from folks like, well, why did people go out? They should have stayed in, and they should have blah, 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 blah. What we learned is a lot of these folks who went out is because they had no choice, right? So you think about someone who is making minimum wage and they're living paycheck to paycheck and the timing of the storm, and they're hearing there's a storm coming, but they don't have enough finances to get to the store to buy the resources that they need. And this is something that a lot of people in our community have missed, because they're so focused on the fact that they went out to the store much sooner and so forth, so on, including myself. I was able to get to the store, but a lot of my neighbors were not able to in our community. And when I say neighbors, I'm not even talking about where I live. I'm just talking about people in different communities who are my neighbors that were not able to get to the stores because they did not have the resources to run in advance and get the groceries that they need. And so they try to get out there in advance. And that's not an excuse, nor is it make it okay that they had to pass. But the fact that they had no option but that is a problem in itself. And so I think those are things that we have learned that have been eye-opening for us. And so when you look at the disparity and the number of people that were impacted by that blizzard and why they were impacted, because that's the why is often what people don't ask. It's important because it paints a picture of the continued health inequities in our communities that have not been fully addressed in our community. And it's not just in Buffalo, right? We know across the nation, we also saw this during COVID. It was highly impacting Black and brown communities disproportionately compared to other communities. And so these are the cycles and patterns that we really need to dig into if we are going to really get to a state and a place where people are just healthier across the board, despite what your background is, that people can't access the care that they need. They should be able to access groceries as they need to, and have the resource that they need to be able to get to the store much sooner. So I think that's one thing.
And have a store in their community.
That is true.
And because it was not just an issue of, do I have the money to pay for the groceries? It was an issue of, is there even a grocery store I can get to?
Right. How far will I have to go? And you can't drive.
Right. And I think one of the things that was so surprising to me is that, I mean, I was one of the lucky ones. I feel like I was very traumatized by that storm, and I never lost power. I never lost internet. Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't have those things happen, although so many people did. I still couldn't get out of my house for 4 days. And my first option of where I could start to buy food was the corner store around the corner that we could walk to. And, you know, it really raised for me these corner stores and, you know, what food is available at the corner stores and how many people are dependent on those stores because, you know, those are the options that people have. And especially on the east side of Buffalo, there's, you know, really just the Tops Market in a large area. It's considered a food desert. And of course, there's trauma attached to that supermarket.
No doubt.
So, I mean, these are all things that impacted people. Like, not only do I have money to be able to pay for groceries ahead of time, but is there even a grocery store I can get to?
Yeah.
And it's shocking to me that in a city of our size, we're still asking that question and it still isn't addressed.
Let's stick with the why. I really liked what you said there, Magdalena, about that. There was this storm quickly, and again, well, of course you should have stayed inside. But why? Why did people leave their homes? Let's get into maybe that as, like you said, Anna, a broader discussion about those whys, those things that we don't, that don't seem to make it to the surface of the conversation when we're talking about health equity in the city of Buffalo. What else are we missing in that picture?
Mm-hmm. You want to add more context to that one?
You can go ahead.
So, I mean, external to the issues that we see even with pay inequities, right? A lot of the folks in these communities are working very minimum wage jobs. Access to public transportation, a continued access to public transportation. I think even when we think about it from a perspective of healthcare, you know, Dr. Glick was sharing a story with us recently of a patient who came super late. They went to one of our locations, the wrong location, and he was trying to get them to come to Barton, and they were on the east side of Buffalo. But they don't have transportation. And so it was going to take them about an hour and some change to get to Barton from the east side of Buffalo. That's another reason why.
Which is a 10-minute drive if you have a car.
Right, right.
Really easy drive. Yeah. And so things like transportation impact people's ability to be able to have the access that they need. I think Anna brought up a point about housing. You know, lead piping is just one of the issues in the housing market in Buffalo, external to the cost, right? And so you're living, so you're making a minimum wage, living paycheck to paycheck in a house that probably is not ideal for most people across the board, may not have insulation, so forth, so on, at a higher rate. I mean, I was talking to my sister recently, who's a single parent, and she lives in a fairly decent house, pays rent, but her rent is the same amount as my mortgage. And it just gives me pause when I think about things like that. And she's paycheck to paycheck. And so those are those whys that folks don't always dig into when they look at the bigger picture, what's impacting our community and why there are these health disparities across the board. And then you have to think about the generational cycles of a systemic poverty that are also in these communities that are not really fully addressed, right? So building, and this is no criticism to the efforts that have been made, because any effort is good effort. But what are we doing to actually address those systems that actually create this perpetual system of poverty that leads to continued perpetual health inequities in our communities across the board? I'm going to pause there because I'm getting excited. I'm going to turn it over to Anna if she wanted to add anything. But those are things that we don't think about or talk about enough.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's also, you know, this question. I remember, you know, before the storm, there was a child that was actually passed away due to the fact that the mother was pushing a stroller down the middle of the street in the winter. And it kind of comes to bear that the reason she had to do that was because the sidewalks weren't shoveled, they weren't repaired. And there has been some repair that has happened since then, but a lot of repair has not happened since then. And you know, we look at things that cause barriers to people. And I think it's easy to say, oh, you know, my sidewalk was repaired. That must have happened everywhere. And, you know, not even necessarily see it as a barrier that impacts people's daily lives and impacts their ability to go different places and do different things. And when you're living paycheck to paycheck, like, you are very much making that decision. Is it more important to me to pay my car insurance or pay my rent? Is it more important to, you know, get a bus pass or, you know, go to the grocery store? Yeah. It really impacts your decisions, especially when you're not just taking into account the amount of money that it costs to do those things. You're taking into account the amount of time that it takes to do those things and whether or not it's actually feasible to be able to balance both things.
And when, you know, we started this program talking about the Jericho Road Community Health Center, and it's, while refugees are welcome, while you most certainly are caring for refugees and other individuals, at the same time, this is a place for everybody. So you see everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah.
What do we learn from the people that we see at Jericho Road?
You know, it's such an interesting question because, you know, I spent the last almost 20 years at Jericho Road. And to me, what I see is strength and resilience. Mm. I see people who, you know, are working really hard to make a better life for themselves, to make a better life for their children, who are, you know, focused on getting by and face some serious challenges, but I see hope. I've always seen hope. And I see that really across the vast majority of the patients that we serve. I think to some extent, that's what makes us feel like we can keep going. I've seen, you know, the amount that investment in some of these areas and positive investment, how quickly that can radically change, you know, what's going on in a community in a positive way.
You intrigue me with that. I'll just follow up then. You're saying positive investment. What are we talking about there? If you could expand on that, please.
So, I mean, just a place like Jericho Road, if you just consider our Barton office, and maybe I'll talk about Broadway a little bit too. But I remember that when I first came to the West Side as, you know, an outsider, pretty naive 20 years ago, I was afraid to walk outside at night. I am not afraid to walk outside at night now. I see, you know, COVID did kind of impact things in a negative way. But if you really looked, you know, pre-COVID, you saw Grant Street that was coming back economically. You're seeing now Niagara Street that's really coming back economically. You're seeing, you know, there's a lot of job availability on the West Side that didn't exist prior to that, not only because we at Jericho Road have jobs, but as other, you know, businesses, you know, opportunities come into the West Side, that those opportunities exist for people not only to live positively, but as a community to see real community change and real community growth in a way that is positive. I see less empty buildings. I see more businesses. I see a community where I'm not afraid to, you know, walk to the corner store at 7 o'clock at night because, you know, it got dark early.
Right.
Those are all positive changes. Those are all changes that happened in the last, you know, 15 years.
Yeah. Yeah. I would echo Anna's wording on the notion of hope. You enter any one of our waiting rooms, whether it's on the east side or the west side of Buffalo, you see hope, right? On the west side, while we see an integration of different folks that we serve, our staff is also pretty diverse as well.
Yes, Jane, could take a look at your webpage.
You could probably find a country at Jericho Road represented in one of our staff members, right, if it's not in one of our patients. But you can also find somebody that looks like somebody in the community. And so we want to perpetuate the notion of hope. I think a story that comes to mind for me was specifically for the east side at 1021 Broadway, when we built the fitness center. And the idea of having a fitness center on the east side of Buffalo, because there's not anything like that, because, you know, a lot of providers will talk to their patients about being healthier. We know that a lot of the comorbidities that you see with these communities are high cholesterol, diabetes, obesity, so forth, so on. And so to build a fitness center on the east side of Buffalo that is also affordable, because it's one thing to build it and then it not be affordable, right, but that's also affordable for family members to be able to come, so that they don't have to say, well, I couldn't walk outside because it wasn't safe or it was too cold or whatever the case may be, was a big deal for us as an organization. And I remember someone, when we did the ribbon cutting, I won't even shame the person, but I remember them walking in and being surprised to see a fitness center that had brand new equipment.
That was nice.
And I remember Dr. Glick saying, well, why is it a surprise? And that's resonated for me, because it's one thing to invest and not fully invest, to be able to then just say, well, we've done this thing and folks should be happy. But it's a whole different thing to invest in the way that you would want it for yourself, which would even take me back to the story of the Good Samaritan, the idea of loving thy neighbor. The idea of it is to love them as you would love yourself. And so what would be the point of us building a fitness center that we ourselves would
That was subpar.
Yeah.
Right.
And so I think investments like that give people a level of excitement. I remember talking to some of the community members who came and they were excited. Not only was it a great gym, but they can afford it.
And get to it.
Yeah, and get to it. And the fact that that location is also on a bus stop just makes it that much better. But investments like that that bring hope, that are also the best that we can give in a way that we would want it for ourselves, is critically important. So when I think about hope, that's what I think about when I look at Barton, I look at Broadway. And obviously, we're not the only organization doing stuff like that, but that's what hope should look like.
Even at Broadway, you know, where we're located is next to other nonprofits. There's several nonprofits that intentionally located in the building. The building itself is four stories, and it's actually three separate buildings, sort of all intertwined internally, and it's right next door to the Broadway Market. So if you think about that, was an empty warehouse, and now we have, I don't know, maybe 50 or 70 staff members there, and five other nonprofits that are on the fourth floor have that many. Other businesses have now moved into the building to kind of capture on that. But now what you also have is maybe 300 people that some of them need lunch every day. Right. They're going to walk over to the Broadway Market. Yeah. Now suddenly you're starting to generate more of a pool of people who are going to start using the Broadway Market, which isn't just investment in our clinic and in sort of opportunity to the community, but it increases the economic
impact
on the community.
And just to follow up, it's kind of maybe a little too specific in some ways, but it's just I always find it fascinating to kind of bring this out. Like you said, here's this community, this workout space that is, like you said, a place that I would want to be in, right? You know, it's not just, well, here's a couple of pieces of equipment or here's some music. At the same time, you said you're on the bus stop. Are you seeing people finding their way there, going through these efforts to take part in that?
Absolutely. I mean, we did a relaunch of the gym, and a lot of the community members came out, and that was a lot of the feedback, just the continued excitement that they can access it so easily through the bus route. If they're already a patient in the area, and or if they're not a patient, that they can access that fitness center. And that was the whole idea behind the advertising around it, the rebranding of it, the relaunching of the fitness center, so that we can make it welcoming for everyone. So we've heard that feedback directly from the community.
It's been interesting. I was a pretty avid user of the gym when it first opened. I actually had my whole weight loss kind of unexpected journey myself as a result from that. And, you know, people tend to work out at the same time. They tend to, you know, be in the same space in a pretty consistent timing. And I ended up sort of with this whole community of people. I'm from the West Side. I was working out on the East Side. I had this whole group of women that don't look, they weren't my age. Yeah. They weren't my normal community. Yeah. And we were like best friends cheering each other on every day. You know, some of us were working on weight. It's also a PT facility. So some of them were actually working on their mobility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really was sort of this unique space that I loved. I was taken by surprise.
And that will do it for today's edition of Producer Picks of the Week. We thank our guests, Chantel Patton, Magdalena Nichols, and Anna Mongo. If you missed anything or just want to hear it again, you can get this program as a podcast wherever you get your podcasts, including the full episodes of each conversation. Each episode is online at WBFO.org. I'm Michael Loss. Thank you for listening.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.